about something that impacts so many of our lives. We have an exciting entrepreneur that's on the radio show with us today to talk about his company, his vision for what he's doing. One of the things that we all ultimately will encounter is how do we face our final days, and are we able to do that with dignity, and are we able to do that in such a way that our loved ones that we are helping through that process, and we all eventually face those final days, whether it's as a result of disease or accident, or hopefully we're blessed with just dying peacefully in old age. But there's something, everybody must face that. And one of the things is modern medicine has continued to improve and enhance our quality of life. It also has enabled the extension of life, and sometimes not in a way that people necessarily want. So my guest today is Michael Brothers from Embark Healthcare, and he is blazing the trail in a new way of having folks to be able to take control of their destiny when it comes to how do they, go gracefully into the night, so to speak. So I'm going to open up his switchboard, so that he can talk about what he's doing with Embark Healthcare and what's going on, and how he's poised to just have a dramatic impact on the marketplace in a profound way. This is is part of what we do at Launch FN, LaunchFundingNetwork.com, is to showcase exciting entrepreneur opportunities that also most often are investment opportunities, although we won't be talking about the investment side of this particular opportunity. We do have an investor briefing scheduled, an online briefing scheduled for Thursday afternoon. If you are an investor that's listening to this and would like to get information about that so that you can hear the full story and all the ins and outs and the details about this, then you need to, if you have not yet already received an email from us, or you need to reply to the email and to get your call-in information for that, you need to go to the launchfn.com website to the Contact Us page and fill out your contact information and put in the comment section that you want to be included in the investor briefing, the online GoToMeeting that will happen on Thursday afternoon. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Michael Brothers from Embark Healthcare. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Apologize for the delay in getting started. I was having a blonde moment in getting onto the switchboard. So,
well, I wanted to tell you that you play a really mean guitar. That was quite a guitar.
Yeah, me and old Brian there, but yeah, we want to, jazz it up a little bit before we get going, get those juices going as we talk about such exciting, innovative kinds of opportunities. So welcome. Why don't you, let's start with you giving your elevator pitch.
Sure.
Tell everybody exactly what I've kind of set the stage just a little bit, but I didn't want to steal your thunder, so tell your elevator pitch on what it is that you're doing over there in Embark Healthcare.
I will, thank you. But I thought your introduction was outstanding, by the way. Embark Healthcare is really about trying to develop comprehensive but very inexpensive and simple programs to improve the way in which the process of dying occurs. That means for the patient, for the physicians, for the loved ones, for the hospital, for everyone. And so we actually are diligently at work on two programs, one that deals with the actual process of dying, and that's the one that I'll focus on today, and the second one, which is a program that deals with the immediate process of asset collection and discovery immediately after the death of a loved one, both of which are issues that we all deal with generally multiple times in our lives. Most people think that the issue is you only die once, and while that's true, you'll be involved in the dying of loved ones for most of us many times in our lives. And for those of us that have been through it before, we recognize that none of the process usually goes smoothly or well. Our goal as a company is to improve that process in simple and logical ways that don't cost much money but return significant value to all constituents.
Okay, so let's explore that a little bit. How do people handle this now? Why is there a problem? And then, you know, we'll dig into your solution.
That's a great question. The problem really began in the mid-60s with the advent of the Medicare program. Prior to the mid-60s, generally speaking, when someone died, the physician would look at that person and their loved ones and say, there's very little I can do for you. Tell me how I can help. And whether it was before the mid-60s or today, when faced with that question, virtually all people in our country say the same thing, which is, ideally, I'd like to die at home. Ideally, you could help keep me out of pain and make this as smooth and painless as possible. However, what started happening in the mid-60s was that the federal government began to pay a lot of money to physicians and hospitals for whatever care that they gave to the elderly. That money was not paid prior to Medicare in most cases, and as a result, the standard of care began to change. And equipment that was already in place but was not being used very much began to be used a lot more. Over the course of a few years, the standard of care, so to speak, changed from ease people on their way in whatever way they would like best, which was usually to be sent home, to prolong life as long as possible using all the technological means that we have. And this change is not necessarily good for everyone. And in fact, in the 70s and 80s, many people and families objected to this change, took this to court, and our court systems ruled multiple times in favor of families and patients to be able to decide what they did and did not want. Yet despite those court rulings, nothing changed. In the early 90s, our federal government got involved and passed legislation called the Patient Self-Determination Act. And despite the federal legislation making it patients' and families' rights to decide what they want and don't want, very little has changed in the last 18 years since that was passed. And so our main program is called the Advanced Directives Clearinghouse, and it is geared at putting everything in place that is required and necessary in today's complex healthcare system to ensure that people have documented what types of care they do or don't want should they end up in a position where they cannot speak for themselves. And beyond that, to help ensure and maximize the chance that they'll actually get that care that they had documented that they wanted and that they'd communicated that they wanted when the time comes.
Okay, so they, and I know when you and I had talked about kind of the scenarios of how this happened, sometimes people will, you know, like myself, I thought until I talked with you that I was all covered. I have a living will.
Yeah.
You know, I've got my preferences stated, but unbeknownst to me, I could get in a situation as a result of an accident or something that happens, and those wishes, you know, won't be honored.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
People may not realize this. How does that happen?
Well, you know, there are really six core problems that prevent people from getting the care they want. The most dominant one is people haven't even bothered to document what they want or to communicate it clearly and legally to their loved ones. And so that's number one, is that people really need to be aware of the consequences of not doing that documentation properly. However, even for those that do, and the numbers vary between an estimate of 15 to 20% of adult Americans have documented their wishes, but even for those 15 to 20% that do, the evidence is clear that in almost all cases, they still don't get what they want, and there are five core reasons for that. The most prominent one being that the document is not where it needs to be when it needs to be there, meaning in the chart before the decisions have to be made by the care team about what to give or not to give the person. And the reason for this is that most people fill out their advance directive or their living will. An advance directive, by the way, is a combination of a living will and a durable power of attorney for health care. So I'll use the term advance directive through this to indicate those two things combined into one document. But most people who filled out either of or both of those, so an advance directive, have done so in one of two ways. They've either done so and paid hundreds of dollars to an attorney to help them fill out this form, or they've gone out on the internet somewhere and downloaded a form from some state website, because each state has its own advance directive form. All 50 states have a different one, interestingly enough, and downloaded it and filled it out. Now, that's great, and it's a wonderful first step. but filling out the form in and of itself is pretty much worthless, because what most people do with it, studies show, in fact, that about 50% of us put it in a safety deposit box for safekeeping, because after all, it's an important legal document. So now you rush to the hospital, or you're out of state, or you're on a vacation, or you're in a car accident, and you're taken to the hospital. The last thing that people think about is that document that they may have filled out years and years ago, filed in a safety deposit box or in a filing cabinet somewhere in a home. I've moved 3 or 4 times since then, by the way. Who the heck knows where that document is? So that what happens is people show up at the hospital to get admitted, and by law in our country, every patient admitted must be asked if they have an advance directive by every hospital. And hospitals do ask that question, and so you say, yes, I have an advance directive. And they say, did you bring it? Do you have it? Can you give it to us? Well, of course not. It's somewhere back at home. That document is now basically of no value to you whatsoever. In those rare cases where you do bring it to the hospital and you look at it and the hospital looks at it to put it in your chart, you may realize it's now been 12 years since you updated that document. And just for example, last year 26 of 50 states changed the regulations about what that form should look like. That doesn't invalidate your form, but over the period of many years, it makes your form look foreign to the people at the hospital and the physicians who are caring for you. And there's also a question about whether you still want the same thing today that you wanted 10 or 12 years ago. A 70-year-old person who fills out their form and is now 80 years old may be in a very different position relative to their feelings about the care that they want. So the first two issues that go wrong are it's not there when you need it, or it's not kept current. Even if you are lucky and fortunate enough to do those two properly, you bring it to the hospital with you, and you just refilled it out again 2 years ago. The third issue is that the living will portion of the document is often not clear enough for the physicians to feel it meets the situation in your particular case. And as a result, they turn to the second part of the document, the durable power of attorney for healthcare, and they turn to the person you've named as the person who gets to speak for you, and they say, what does Karen want? And that person says, why are you asking me? Well, because Karen named you as their healthcare agent. You hadn't even bothered to let that person know. My own father only let me know I was his healthcare agent last December, and apparently I had been his agent for 4 years. I had no idea I was his agent, and certainly no idea exactly what he wanted until we sat down and spoke about it. So the third issue is that you have either not named a healthcare power of attorney, or the person you've named is not aware of what you want, or you picked the wrong person. You picked your brother, who has since moved out of state, and he's not even there when you need the decision to be made. The fourth is, if you've gotten the first three right, which is rare, everybody's in unison, and now your adult grown child walks in the room and says, why have you not hooked mom up to that feeding tube? I'm going to sue you if you don't hook mom up to that feeding tube. And what do you know, but most doctors will hook you up to the feeding tube, despite the fact that that's technically not legal. They're concerned about a malpractice lawsuit. And so you also have to line up all your loved ones and the people who are likely to care for you around what it is that you want. And the last case is that there are certain physicians in hospitals who just don't believe that they have to abide by your wishes because they know better. Or for religious reasons, they don't want to withhold that feeding tube from you. And there are laws to protect your rights in those cases, but who's going to be there to protect your rights? What we've done with our program called the Advanced Directive Clearinghouse is to solve all these issues. We solve the issue of distribution, that is getting lots of people to sign up, by marketing our programs to the public through some of the largest organizations in the country. And we've already had meetings with some of the largest associations, charities, health plans, insurance companies, and hospital systems in the country. And I can say, as a 23-year healthcare veteran, that I have never seen such a positive and overwhelmingly positive response from all these various constituencies. They allow us then to get our message out about the importance of the Advanced Directives Clearinghouse to literally millions and millions and millions of people at a time for the first time ever. Beyond that, then, once someone decides this is a program that they want, we send them the most current document available for their state, along with detailed instructions and education on how to make good choices for yourself and fill the form out properly. Once it's returned to us, we digitize and store it on a database so that it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We give them stickers for their insurance card and ID cards to help them be able to tell the hospital, yes, I have one, and I can't remember the name of the service. Oh, here it is on this sticker. Just call them 24 hours a day or go to their website, and my advance directive can be in my chart immediately. We help people keep it current by staying on top of all 50 states' forms at all times and updating that whenever necessary. We help educate the person on how to pick a good healthcare agent, and then we educate the healthcare agent on how to be a good agent for their loved one. We send information and education to all your loved ones that you provide us information to about the importance of being in unison when you go, should you end up needing this in the hospital. And then lastly, we set up a national legal support network of healthcare specialty attorneys who are there and will provide one free hour of aid to you or your healthcare agent in the situation where you're having problem having your document enforced as it should be legally. So we've built a comprehensive information technology-centered program around getting the message out of the importance of this, doing it at much less expensively than going to attorney, and more importantly than that, making the entire process such that you maximize the chances of getting the care you would have wanted if you could have spoken for yourself.
Okay. So that's fascinating. Let's say, where are you in the process? How much of this has been developed? Are you ready? Are you ready to go full to market? Where are you in the process of getting this to market?
We're about 90 days from doing our first direct-to-consumer marketing activities. We are just in the process of finalizing all of the complex IT systems. We have redundant service centers already set up and ready to get going in Florida and in Kansas. Of course, we have two service centers because since we're a 24-hour operation, we cannot afford to ever be down. So we've set them in two different parts of the country. And those are built and ready to go. We have all the protocols and processes in place. We have all of the marketing materials ready to go. We're really basically finalizing our systems and testing our systems prior to going live in what we anticipate will be 90 days. And so we're also simultaneously doing our sales calls on some of the largest organizations in the country to get them lined up and ready to help us blast off with this multi-million person marketing effort the minute that the go-live date occurs.
So it sounds like you're very close, and that's exciting.
Yeah.
There's two challenges in getting it into the market. There's two pieces of communication or education, because, I mean, one of the things that I know we look for when we're working with folks and investors also look for is something that's creating a market, okay? Because then it has huge potential because it's uncharted territory, and that's really what you're doing is creating a market here. And so whenever you go to create a market, you have to – there's a whole lot of education because
yeah.
There is no competition other than the status quo, the way people have been doing it.
Yes,
you know,
the unsuccessful way people have been doing it. That's correct.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the inefficient, inadequate way that people have been doing this. And so you have to first let them know that whatever they're doing is inadequate. And, you know, at the same time, letting them know that you have this service that does with this, you know, all this that it does and the benefits of that. So what is you've got the associations you're working with? How else are you going to get this out into the marketplace in a big way? What's your go-to-market strategy to get that viral marketing, the word of mouth going, the whole, you know, massive explosion that needs to happen, and not only for the profitability and what you want to accomplish, but just, you know, for everybody's well-being, quite frankly.
I appreciate that. And in fact, that from the beginning, our belief was that because what we're doing, this is one of those really rare occasions where all we're doing is trying to ensure that people get the exact care that they want at the time that they want it. But what's interesting is this is one of those rare occasions where by giving people the exact care that they want, the healthcare system saves billions and billions of dollars. After all, end-of-life care is one of the most expensive things. The single most expensive episode in the care process is the end-of-life episode. And in most cases, it's because people are getting care that they wouldn't even want if they asked for it. So we're involved in something that has virtually no objections to it. We really don't go anywhere and hear anyone say, well, what about this or what about that, which is a new one for me, as I said, having been in healthcare for 23 years. What we get is, why hasn't somebody done this before? And the basic answer is, it takes some very sophisticated IT and involvement with the Internet that's just in the last few years become inexpensive enough, basically, to do properly. And so, you know, the issue here is that we are ready to go with something that does good for people, and the outcome or the byproduct of doing well for people is the healthcare system saves billions of dollars. And our challenge is how to get the message out to as many people as fast as possible, knowing full well that only a very small percentage of those people will be willing to fully educate themselves on the process, think clearly through the process, and therefore sign up. The good news is, just in America, this is a worldwide problem, excuse the expression, but wasting money, caring for people at the time of their death, giving them things they don't even want, it's a worldwide problem. In America alone, we therefore have a market of approximately 200 million adult Americans. If you just think about it in terms of people over the age of 65, then you're looking at 40 or 50 million potential customers in America. But for those of us that are approaching that age, we're seeing our parents dying or getting ill, and so we start thinking about these things. So I would argue that anyone over the age of about 40 becomes a very valid customer for this, either for themselves or to purchase a product like this for their parents. And therefore, the question is, how do we get out to as many of those 100 million Americans as possible, as soon as possible, and as effectively as possible? And we are going to do it with a multi-pronged approach. We certainly are going to do as much direct-to-consumer marketing as we can relative to direct email campaigns and possibly even some infomercial types of activities, although that remains to be seen based on cost issues. But our core way of getting the message out is by using the credibility and the distribution of major organizations around the country who want to partner with us to get the message out, because in one way, shape, or form, they believe in what we're doing, and they believe that everyone benefits by what we're doing. And so, as I said, we've already called on some of the largest health insurance companies in the country. We've already called on some of the largest hospital systems in the country, some of the largest charitable organizations in the country, and some of the largest associations in the country. We've even called on some major employers to offer this as a voluntary benefit. And I can tell you that we have yet to have anyone come back to us and be poo-pooing it or be a naysayer. Everyone, almost inevitably, everyone stops us before we finished our pitch, looks at us and says, we get it, it's a no-brainer, when are we ready to do this with you? When are you ready to do this with us, basically? And so right now, our only holdup is, that I can see, is we're not quite ready yet. So we've got to just finish our systems, test them thoroughly, and then I believe we're going to see an enormous blast off.
Okay, so that's what is your barrier to entry? You know, what keeps somebody like that already does living wills or you know, power of attorneys, you know, like the prepaid legals of the world, from going and creating a repository to do this because they've already got a database, or do they become a partner that will resell what you do instead? Is that, how do you address that when somebody that hasn't thought of it yet but has potential, they got big deep pockets, what's your barrier to entry on something like that?
Well, let me try to answer all those questions. The first issue is that it seems very clear to me that having now done this for almost 2 years, that it's a lot more complex than I thought it was when I went into it. When I set out to develop the Advanced Directives Clearinghouse, based on a basic concept I've been working on for years, I thought this will take about 6 months and, you know, X dollars, and boy was I wrong. It's a lot more complicated because you are dealing with very important and critical healthcare issues. You're dealing with issues of privacy. You're dealing with issues of mass marketing, you're dealing with issues of 24/7 availability and redundancy. So it costs more, and it's more complex than I ever expected that it would be when I go into it. And anyone who would try to jump in and do this would find the same thing. Secondly, whoever basically jumps out and gets the message out first becomes the de facto winner of this enormous space. And the reason for that is several. Number one is, let's just say, for example, that AARP decides to co-market this with us. And they send out 44 million notices to their various members about the fact that they believe in this product and that they've endorsed this product and they're sponsoring this product through Embark Healthcare. What possible reason would they have to justify changing that endorsement to somebody else? Certainly nobody's going to come in at a significantly different price. Certainly nobody's going to come in with a differentiating product from us. And they've already communicated their co-marketing agreement and sponsorship to 44 million people. How do they, a year down the line, go, no, never mind that. Now do it with this company. Doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so I think the single biggest barrier to entry to this is to get out fast and hard and to have alignments with as many major organizations with high visibility in the healthcare arena as possible. And so that's where our marketing focus is. It's in aligning and contracting for these sponsorships so that we line them up and we have them beside us. And at that point, imagine that let's use the example you used, you're a prepaid legal, or you're a Microsoft, or you're a Google, and you're interested in getting into the space because all of a sudden you realize this is one of those rare, untapped billion-dollar opportunities in healthcare. And this company has jumped out to the lead, and they already have sponsorships from some of the largest health plans, hospital systems, and organizations in our country. It certainly, at that point, would make a lot more sense for them to talk to us about partnering with us or even buying us than it would starting from scratch and trying to compete in a space where we've already jumped in and grabbed the major endorsements.
Right. Okay, so that completely makes sense. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times your medical background, so let's talk about your background and how you came to, you know, get in this space, recognize it as an opportunity. What's the experience that you bring to the table?
A great question. And first, I would tell you that the end-of-life space has been interesting to me since I was a teenager because I watched my mother die from a prolonged bout with cancer, and I didn't like how I saw her final episode go down. So it's been a personal passion of mine now, since I'm about to turn 51, for over 30 years. And it became more interesting to me when I was running a region of the country for Humana. My background is that I ran health plans for Cigna, for Humana. I've been in the corporate office of United Healthcare, and I've been the CEO. I was the first CEO of one of the first hospitalist companies in the nation, Cogent Healthcare, which is still in business. And so I've been doing healthcare and running health plans or healthcare companies since 1986. And what's interesting is that in every one of them, whether it was a health plan or the hospitalist company, the same stories kept coming back to me over and over again from my nurses and my doctors. And that was, our least favorite part of this is when we care for someone dying. And at first I thought it was because it's so depressing. No, it's because it's filled with arguments, emotion, turmoil, disagreements, and waste. And people are watching people die hooked up to machines and feeling the sense that that's not what that person would have wanted, and people feel helpless to do anything about it. They aren't helpless, and they shouldn't be helpless. And so what we've set about doing is to empower patients and families to get the care they would want.
Okay. So tell us about the rest of the folks that are on your management team that are helping you execute this.
Well, I feel really, really fortunate and lucky to, as in essence, as a startup, we have a very deep management team, the people have been working for free for quite a long time and for a very low pay as well for a time because they believe in what we're doing. My chief operating officer, a lady named Michelle Mercer, has worked with me since 1989. She was my COO at Humana. She was my COO at Cogent. And she's an RN with a hospital administration background and just a dynamic, detail-oriented chief operating officer. Our chief information officer was the chief information officer at Cogent Healthcare that put the systems together to build one of the nation's largest hospitalist companies. Our chief development officer, meaning head of sales, Bill Banky, is a entrepreneurial sales leader with successes under his belt. He helped sell close to $100 million worth of business at Cogent Healthcare in his 7 years there. He then led a company called WebVMC to a leadership position in the telemedicine space. Bill is just a dynamic salesperson who can basically sell snowballs to Eskimos. And his excitement about this is, as he says, it's the easiest thing I've ever sold because there are no objections to it. So that's our core management team. We have a couple of other really outstanding people, all of whom I've worked with before. I've basically recruited most of the very best people I've worked with over my 23 years in healthcare, and they're excited to be a part of the team.
Okay, so that sounds great, and I'm sure as you'll continue to expand as you bring in the capital you need and the revenues that you need to build this into a multi-million dollar organization. What are the different revenue streams that you'll enjoy as part of taking this to market?
That's another great question. You've done this before, Karen, obviously. One of the really exciting things about Embark Healthcare is the cash flow program. That is, everybody who joins, regardless, there are two methods for people to, in essence, join and pay us, but both of which we get paid in advance for. So one of the beautiful things about Embark's model is that it's a cash flow machine that does not need exorbitant money to turn to cash flow positive. The two ways in which people join are the following. Either they join individually or they're given the program by a big organization who pays us for it. So let me flow that through, and I'll use, for no other reason than ease and brevity, I'll use the example of a health plan, and particularly let's use the example of a senior health plan, a Medicare HMO. So let's pick a Medicare HMO that has 100,000 Medicare lives that they cover, that they have the financial responsibility for. For them, because we've called on a few, this is the biggest no-brainer ever. Their attitude is, so we co-market this program to our 100,000 elderly members. In exchange, our elderly members make a voluntary decision about whether to join this or not. They get a discount because they're affiliated with our HMO from your normal price. That's the benefit we bring to those members. For every member that does join, they can feel confident that they'll get the care that they want should they pass away while being a member of our health plan. And we get to be able to say that we did something wonderful for our members, but whose byproduct is our medical costs go down. Why would we not do this? So there are two ways in which a health plan can work with us. The simplest way is to simply get our message out to all their members and to offer a discount from our retail price to their members who wish to join voluntarily. So our full retail price is $80 to join and for your first year of services, and then $30 per year for renewal to keep your documents updated, to be available 24/7, et cetera, et cetera. So that a person joining through a health plan at a 20% discount would basically pay $64 for their membership and $24 a year to renew and keep their membership current and available. Now, and that money comes in advance. So from our standpoint, that cash is in advance, and then we have the liability for the year to provide services. But from a cash flow standpoint, what a wonderful model for us. So if 1,000 people join, that's $64,000 of revenue immediately on a credit card, boom, and into our program. The alternative method is for a health plan to actually offer the program for free to any of their members that want it. And in that situation, we basically build something called a utilization corridor capitated program, meaning the health plan pays us a per member per month fee in advance based on the anticipated number of people that we both believe will join, and then on an ongoing basis based on the actual number of their people that join. And as long as the member maintains their membership in that HMO, the membership is completely free to that member. if the member drops off that Medicare HMO, then they would be notified by us that in order to continue their membership, they either have to have joined another Medicare HMO that gives it away for free, or they need to pay us a certain fee for their membership. Again, either way, under either scenario, our cash flow is payment up front, services to be delivered as we go. And so, again, as a startup company, this is a unique and outstanding situation in which we have no accounts receivables.
Oh, sure, right. It's just it's a cash cow.
The cash cow. It's a cash-generating machine. And because it's a repetitive and scalable program, as is our second program, which we won't have time for today, but because they're repetitive, IT-centered, scalable programs, the 10,000th member, you know, has an incredible the first few thousand members cover our fixed expenses, and then everything else after that is variable, which is very low because it's an IT, primarily IT-based program. So we have outstanding margins, and the cash flow is pretty incredible once you reach your critical mass, which appears to be 50 to 100,000 members.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Wow.
So,
let me
put that in perspective. So I'm going to pick on a company like, I don't know, let's pick on Humana. Humana with tens of millions of overall covered lives, but several million covered lives that are over the age of 65. So let's say that we could convince Humana to co-market this program to 3 million people over the age of 65. And let's just pick some silly little number like 2% penetration. So of all these senior people who understand this issue, only 2% end up signing up of the 3 million. If I do my math right here on the phone, that would be 60,000 members. One client like Humana basically turns us into a cash flow positive company.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, I've not quite seen anything quite like it before, and it's why we're so excited about it. We're doing something good for society, good for the healthcare system, that also has tremendous upside potential both in revenue and cash flow. Very exciting.
Okay, so I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the briefing that we're going to have tomorrow afternoon. On Thursday afternoon at 3
yeah.
o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Any investors that are still listening should go on online to launchfn.com and click on the Contact Us page if you have not already received an invitation from us that you can reply to. And let us know that you want to be included in that, and we'll call you and qualify you as an investor and then give you the information. But before we close out here, Michael, why don't you give folks your website so that they can go get more information on there as well. On LaunchFN website, under company profiles, there is Embark Healthcare summary is up there on the page. You can get an overview of it, but I'm sure they might even want to get on a mailing list to know when this is available.
Our website is currently not available to the public, so I'm going to give people a way to get on. They can get on. They just have to have a username and password, and I'm going to give a general one to the people who are listening to this program. The website is Embark Health, www.embarkhealth.com. When you go there, you'll need a username and password if you want to look around at what we're up to. And for general purposes for this audience, the username that you would use is the word sponsor, S-P-O-N-S-O-R, all in lower cases. And the password that you would use is Embark, also in lowercase.
Okay. Okay, great. So say that one more time, just in case. The
sure.
Embark Healthcare, go ahead. So they.
Yeah, the www.embarkhealth.com. Technically, you can also do Embark Healthcare. It'll transfer you to embarkhealth.com. The username you would use is the word sponsor in lowercase, and the password is Embark in lowercase, and that'll get you in to allow you to look around a bit and learn a little bit more about the Advanced Directives Clearinghouse.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much. Looking forward to talking to you again tomorrow and connecting you up and perhaps having you present in the August event. And looking forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you very much for spending time with us today and sharing all this exciting information, and best of luck to you in getting this thing launched and in the marketplace and changing people's lives.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you. All
mm-hmm.
right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.